in our Western mindset of perfection, which really perfection means death, because once something is perfect, there's no more room for anything new or growth. So really perfection is a bogus ideal. The messy bits are actually, that's where the gold is hidden. That's where the diamonds and the jewels are.
Welcome to another episode of Relentlessly Resilient, where real people share real life experiences and the tools they develop to move forward and live their best life. I'm Michelle Scharf. Today, Jenny is not with us. I should let our regular listeners know she's just running a little bit behind. And so I decided to go ahead and take this scheduled guest on my own. Today we have with us Luana Victoria Arana, and she has written a book, Resilience, Grace, and the Art of Showing Up, a spiritual journey of empowerment against all odds. And Luana, I just want to tell you, I love this book. I have not made it all the way through it. However, I am loving everything that I'm just drinking it in.
Thank you so much. Oh, that really touches my heart to hear. Thank you. I'm happy you're enjoying it.
I am. You know, we can probably focus mostly on the first, just the introduction and prologue has so many gems of wisdom and lessons of life and growth. And, you know, we're all here on this journey and we're all trying to make sense of it. And some people feel like life is happening to them, you know, staying in that victim mindset, like, well, this is just what happens. You know, life is a bowl of cherries and I'm getting all the pits, right? And other people say, okay, this happened, but why? And what value or lesson can I learn from this? Which for me is the cornerstone and the foundation of resiliency. And you talk a lot about that just in the first two sections of your book.
Well, one of the things that, you know, we tend to forget is that the pits are not the pits. They're actually seeds to a new tree.
Ah, I love that. You know, I love how I made just an analogy and you turned that analogy the rest of the way. Like you took it and went with it. I love that. I love it.
Yeah.
And that'll get us into some other areas of your book where you really talk about the nature of God or the universe or love and how you've connected it to nature. And there's some really beautiful illustrations in that and many of them that I very much resonate. I'm so excited. Before we get started and getting into the deep dive, tell our viewers just a little bit about you, who you are, where you are on this planet, and why you wrote the book.
Wow, that's a lot of information. And cherry pick.
Right.
I'll use your metaphor to cherry pick the right pieces to say for this interview right now. So I'll start with where I am. I am in British Columbia, Canada, on a beautiful small island called Galliano Island. And I am blessed to own and operate my Dream Healing Retreat Center.
Oh, lovely.
Where I work with women doing exactly that, building their resilience, reclaiming their inner power, not as a hyperbole, but as a real, real reality. There's a lot of, empowerment, empower yourself, but a lot of it's just really on the surface, and it's dealing with the mind. It's not dealing with the soul. And so my work is really focused on helping women reconnect to their soul, because that gets buried under the trauma. And then we only identify with our story, and we forget our soul has a story too, and it has a purpose of why it came. And there are reasons for every adversity that are also, like, again, the cherry pit. It's a potential of a new growth, a new expansion of self, a new awakening.
Yeah.
You know, we lose touch of when we fall into the belief that we're powerless, and we are anything but powerless. Even if the listeners, just for a moment, you know, you just think of something that brought you great joy. You can feel your body chemistry instantly. It lifts. You get bubbles. You get excitement. And then the next second you think of something that hurt you or that you're struggling with, you're going to feel your shoulders are going to slouch. You're going to drop down. Your energy is going to go low. And this is the power we have, but we don't use it.
Right.
Our thoughts and the way we choose to word our experience and the way we choose to write the storyline of our experience is actually what's creating the reality that we keep repeating to listen to. When we're in the victim mode, then we, you know, and without negating the victimization, those are two different things. You know, we can be the victim of a crime or an abuse, but living a victimized state is something very different. And a lot of people don't realize that difference. So I'm just getting off topic here. So anyways, I get to have my healing studio where I get to help women to really, 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 really embody their personal power to become a master over their own mind that is designed to serve our soul. Whereas when we have trauma, our mind squashes our soul. So we need the mind. It's important, but it needs to be in alignment with our highest good and our highest purpose and our soul journey. And so I help women to get, you know, their new momentum and new trajectory to embark on that journey. And so this retreat center, it was my dream forever. And, you know, it seemed like it would never happen due to different circumstances. But then, you know, magic happens. And my book, The Art, you know, Resilience, Grace, and the Art of Showing Up, the title came because my clients used to just do massage before, and I would share my story, and people would ask me, you know, you should write a book. You should write a book. And then finally, many years later, I went, okay, if I write a book, you know, what is it going to be called, or what am I going to talk about? Like, what got me through? And then the thoughts came, well, you know, nature's been my inspiration since I was a little girl. I've always been in awe of nature and how it's able to recreate and renovate itself no matter what catastrophe happens. Something good, something new always grows out of a natural disaster, whatever that might be.
Yeah.
So that always fascinated me and made me think, well, I'm nature. And that force that's regrowing the trees, or, you know, or rebuilding the land, or, you know, the tree that's growing through the cement, you know, all these qualities. I say, well, I have that force in me too. I must.
Right.
I must have that force in me. It doesn't make sense. It's not even logical to think that I wouldn't, since I am an act and a creation of nature as well.
Yeah.
From an early childhood, I've just always had that connection. And yeah, many times, you know, life tested my connection. I can tell you that much for sure. But each time, no matter the challenge that I met or the traumatic experience, when, you know, I would realign myself again to that awareness, always something magical happened. Always grace appeared. And that's why grace is in the title. So resilience, grace, and the art of showing up. You know, I chose to show up to learn.
Mm-hmm.
I chose to show up and say, okay, no matter what happens to me, I will learn and I will grow. And I'll feel what I feel. It's not about suppressing my pain or my sadness, but we need to cultivate our own adult self within us mm-hmm. to hold the space when our child self is releasing that pain.
Absolutely.
But most of the time, we've never grown to full adulthood because the traumas keep us in the limbic system, you know, fight, survival, child mind.
Absolutely.
Right? The subconscious. And so I made the choice. And again, it was challenged. I can't count how many times you read it in the book, how many times. But I always realigned myself to nature and went, okay, you know, where can I grow from this? Or, you know, even when, you know, later in the story, you didn't read that yet. I was held hostage in my home and I was raped mm-hmm. by somebody I trusted. And I was like, how did this happen? I was lucky to get out alive. And I did journaling afterwards. I'm like, okay, so what part of me enabled this? And not as blame. It was like, what part of me wasn't confident enough to read the signals? Because there were red flags, but I ignored them because I thought, oh, I'm the one with a problem.
Right.
And this is what, well, especially when we've had childhood trauma, we tend to take all the weight on us and say, no, I'm the problem. If I change, then they'll be better. If I change, they'll love me. If I change, you know, they'll see how great I am. And this is the childlike mentality that a good majority of adults are walking around with. We've never grown.
Right.
And it's because we have these pockets of trauma in us that we had to just brush aside, put under the rug, and build a coping persona. You know, like an ego, a survival ego, survival persona. And it's a good thing we built it because we wouldn't survive without it. So it's not dissing the ego. We needed that protection, right? But we need to grow beyond it.
Yeah.
And so when that situation happened to me, my immediate direction was, okay, what did I miss? How did I miss it?
Right.
How do I get in touch with that part of me that didn't feel confident, that didn't feel secure? that felt afraid, that was looking for love so much she was willing to override the red flags.
Right. I want to talk to you for that section for just a minute. Let's hold it for just a second. You know, for those of us, we're about the same age. So let's say Gen X. For those of us born in the Gen X era, 1970s, 1980s, there wasn't a lot of research or knowledge about trauma impacts to our well-being, our health, although there's an awful lot of us that are doing the work. Now, there's a lot more information out there, and a lot of younger kids are accessing a lot of that information. However, they didn't necessarily get the tools either, because we were raising our children in our trauma.
And so it's
kind of interesting the state that we are right now, because there's all this information out there. There's an awful lot of people doing the work from every age, from 20, 30. We had a 16-year-old, very self-aware on our show, very much doing the inner work. And that's inspiring, right?
But
for those of us and our millennial children, it's an interesting time, because we didn't have the conscious awareness of the trauma and the potential added complications that we were raising our children in, right? And now we've got this world where a lot of us are doing our work. And sometimes that work is messy. And
it's always messy.
Yeah.
It can't not be messy.
Right.
It can't not be messy. We can't make that work pretty.
Yeah, it's just not. And so it's really interesting. We're kind of in a magical place in time right now, where so much work is being done and there's so much more awareness regarding the inner work that is important to do. Before we get started any further, we ask all of our guests, what does resilience mean to you?
What resilience means to me, so again, nature is my example my whole life, right? And so for me, but resilience isn't just perseverance. Resilience isn't just pushing through. That's one aspect of it. But for me, resilience is that act of creation. What new life can I create out of every experience? What wisdom can I connect to and cultivate that enriches my life?
Yeah.
And then helps me to be a contributor to this life, to this world, which we're all here meant to be in our own ways. Even if the contribution is just smiling at somebody who's had a sad day and you didn't even know they had a sad day. You know, people are often looking for the big purpose and they're missing all the little purposes. Millions of little moments of purpose every day when we act with kindness. But the thing is, too, is when we have trauma, it's hard. I had times where I could not be kind, where my nervous system was so charged and so ready for fight.
Yeah.
Right? To defend. And that's a reality. And so that's one of the things, too, is that so resilience also, it embraces what is. It doesn't try to make what it's not. Right? It works with what is, what's left after the storm.
Yeah.
And so to meet our pain and our traumas as they are, not smoothing over, not rationalizing, not nipping and tucking, not trying to skip the messy bits.
Yeah.
The messy bits are actually, that's where the gold is hidden. That's where the diamonds and the jewels are.
Right.
It's in the messy bits. But we've, in our, you know, especially our Western mindset of perfection, which really perfection means death. Because once something is perfect, there's no more room for anything new or growth. So really, perfection is a bogus ideal, right? Because it just means there's nothing more.
Right.
Versus a path of progress. Right? So the mess is a part of the path of progress. And when we have a progress mindset with understanding the way of resilience, it's going to be messy in the recreation process, right? Then we start to give value to just even the micro changes that can happen within the mess that then are in momentum to create the new. Whereas the world we have now with perfectionism, I mean, you know, especially here in North America, somebody experiences you having an irritating moment or whatever, and then you're labeled that for the rest of your life.
Yep, absolutely.
Oh, that person's just angry. That person's just mean. you know, or even I have to say, you know, everybody's saying, oh, that person's toxic, this person's narcissist, this person's toxic. But that whole labeling itself is toxic.
Yes, absolutely.
So the people who are complaining other people are toxic, they are actually the most toxic because they are not looking through the lens of life and love and the fact that life is messy. That the fact is that people are hurting and they're just barely making it through every day. Some people can't smile. Some people, you know, had a loss. And you might see them in that moment and then all of a sudden there's a label. People aren't inquiring. People aren't taking the time to get to know even oneself, let alone another.
Absolutely.
So resilience for me is all of that. It's not pushing through. It's also being able to meet my darkness.
Mm-hmm.
It's me being able to meet my mess and love myself through it and love others through their mess too.
I love that. I love that so much. We need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to dive into this a little deeper because you actually hit on the first part of the book that I really wanted to get in and talk to you about. So we're going to take a break and we'll be right back.
Beautiful.
And we're back. Luana, it's so funny that I wondered when I read this book, I'm like, I wonder if she's going to talk about this when I ask her, what does resilience mean to her? And you almost did to a T. In the very introduction of the book, you said, my book is also an ode to nature, revealing how connecting to nature as a way to reflect self, to nourish and to activate our innate creativity and resilience teaches and nourishes us in times of adversity and challenge. Nature's resilience is an active force in all of us that grants the capacity to meet challenges with confidence and affirmative action. Some confuse resilience with perseverance, and this is what I want to talk to you about.
Mm-hmm.
Where we just push through with force and strength. When we only push through without really leaning in and growing our understanding and awareness, through the challenges, we're actually building stress in the body and bearing over the emotions and pain that get ignored by only pushing through. And I have to say, The reason this resonated with me so heavily is I've done over 150 of these interviews, and many times people really feel that they have a story of resilience. And I'm not saying that they don't, but there are some people that have really just been pushing through life. And I noticed the subtle differences. It doesn't mean that they don't have a story to tell and that I'm not willing to share it on the show. But, you know, the interesting thing to me is that when we just push through, eventually we get to a point where we can't just push through anymore. We will either psychologically break, physically break, emotionally break, right? On some level, we just lose the strength because it's not building muscles of resiliency when we just push through. And it is interesting because the difference between us and nature, a seed beginning to grow does break through that earth and reach for the sun. And it doesn't know any better, right? It's doing what it was just meant to do. But
and it's a part of the process.
Right.
The breakthrough is a percentage of the process,
right,
but it's not the whole process.
It's not the whole process. And the difference between us and that seedling is that we have a conscious state. We have a conscious state and we have purpose. And that purpose is not only divine in nature, the universal collective responsibility of being part of the whole, but it's also, we have emotions and feelings that are unique to us from our lived and learned perspectives, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we have to process through some of these things through that lens. And I think that's the part that people get hung up the most on, is not understanding how to process that. Some people may go to a therapist and that may be necessary. Some people may go to a massage therapist, a Reiki master, do energy work of, there's a multitude of types, a life coach, a mentor. So there's a lot of different ways to be able to learn how to process through, and there's no right or wrong way. And some people may use multiple ways to do it.
Most often you do need multiple ways because we're multidimensional beings.
Right.
And the trauma has impacted us on multiple levels.
Right.
So for certain levels, talk therapy is absolutely essential. For other layers, you know, like movement therapy was a big part for me.
Yeah.
You know, and massage, somatic work.
Yeah.
You know, and then some of it is just, you know, meditation. Some of it can be yoga. So most often for me, at least in my experience and what I've witnessed too, in the, you know, I've worked with over, you know, over the years, 8,000 women, you know, that is important to be open to multiple avenues, because what we get lost in is we think, well, I did this and I had this process, so I should be all healed and done. And it's like, it's the biggest joke.
It is the biggest joke.
And I used to get caught in that too. And then I would, you know, self-deprecation. I should know better. Why did I still have that reaction? Oh, da, 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 da. And then we end up beating ourselves up more because we don't embrace and understand the multiplicity of what we are inside. It doesn't mean multiple personalities. We have multiple layers of experience on a somatic level.
Right. And we also get to revisit those issues that come up, or those issues or traumas that have been created in different ways in different periods of our time.
Exactly, for different layers of healing.
Right.
You know, right? So if you were to imagine, you know, like a visual I like to use is just like, imagine a lot of people use the onion. So that's a familiar one. So mm-hmm. at the core is our tender, most vulnerable self that felt harmed, mm-hmm. right? That's what we're protecting. Our ego developed all these strategies and all these layers like an onion to protect at each different layer of our life. And the ones that are the thickest are the ones that are around that core hurt.
Right.
And then as we live through life, different situations, you know, where everything is all about avoiding feeling that emotional pain. So we create our persona, our identity in the world to avoid tapping into that pain. And so we grow further and further, further away from that. But as we grow further away from that, we grow further away from our true self as well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so say, you know, in my 20s, I worked through 2-3 layers of the onion, but there's still all these layers. So I'm still, the core wound is there. It hasn't been reached yet. So that's why we have these momentums of euphoria and awakening. And then the next day or a few days later, we fall again. It's because, okay, life's saying, okay, you got rid of that layer. Good. Let's get this one up now. This is in line, right? Mm-hmm. And so the mindset around that's really important, so that I'm not saying, okay, I'm healed, I'm done. Because, gosh, I hear that so much from almost everybody. I've done all this work. I should be done, you know? And I have to really, you know, lovingly, compassionately just bring them to that awareness that, yes, you did that layer. And that layer is valid, and that layer is complete, and you did good. But there's just more. There's more layers to uncover. Mm-hmm. And when we can understand that, we can cultivate more self-compassion for ourselves. So then we can hold the space for the messy stuff to come up rather than keep suppressing it. And then we can hold space for others.
Absolutely. But I'm glad that you brought up that point on being healed. I've been doing self-awareness work since 1998. So I was like 32, I think, or something like that. And it's been a long journey. And there are times that I'm like, oh my gosh, why this again? And then I have to say, oh my goodness, it's you again. I get to visit this again. And it's really an opportunity, right? And
it's like saying, thank God this is here again, because if this is still in me, I need to heal it.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I have found that there are some things that just get to be revisited, maybe less frequently, maybe with less emotion. But also I'm like, oh, I can see this is still playing out in my nature, in my way of thinking or doing or being or my perception of my reality. Yeah. And so the more work you do, the more aware you become. And it's really funny. I'm a widow. I've been widowed 5 years. I've been dating. Dating is an opportunity to really grow in a multitude of ways because you meet people that are so abstract to what you're accustomed to. Like, you know, I was accustomed to the same man for 32 years, and we built our own little society and conversation and way of speaking and doing and being, right? And now I'm interfacing with different men and different opportunities, but also even just a lot of different women in the singles world where I live. And I'm in some social media groups where they talk about, you know, I'm doing the work or I'm healed. I'm healed. I've done my work, which is why I'm not dating. And it's usually in conjunction with justifying whatever, wherever they're at.
And that's a sign that they actually need to date because they haven't done the work. It's actually a revealing of the opposite.
Exactly.
And the deepest healing only happens in relationship. I'm sorry to say. It only happens in relationship.
Absolutely the truth. And it's also the most painful thing to do, right?
Absolutely,
and so it's interesting because I shudder anytime I hear people say, I'm healed, I've done the work, I've healed. Because what I hear is, I've done what I'm comfortable doing and I'm not willing to go any further.
And I've said no to love.
Right.
That's what it's saying.
Absolutely. And, you know, because no to love and no to moving forward and no to being able to experience a new side of who you are and a new challenge, right?
Yeah. And when I say no to love, it's not just loving another person or being loved. It's loving themselves.
Oh, absolutely.
So I had that mindset for a while too, right? Mm-hmm. And then I realized that mindset is robbing me of me.
Yeah.
It's totally robbing me of me. So if I make everything about somebody else, then I'm already lost.
Right.
So somebody else in my world is actually an invitation for me to get to know me and to love me. That's what it really is.
And it, you know, it is challenging, right? Like I was in a relationship last year, and in that relationship, he basically said, you know, I hope I don't regret this, but I'm breaking up with you. And I'm like, yeah, you probably are going to regret this. And because I knew right then and there what he was saying is, you are so uncomfortably moving forward at a pace that I am not comfortable with. You are going to require me to show up in a way that I don't want to. And I'm not ready to. And I accept that. I'm okay with that. I'm now in a new relationship and, you know, it's challenging for both of us. I'm learning that I'm meeting the beast of overthinking again. And for many reasons. And I'm having to have conversations with myself. Like, I'm overthinking this. I just need to be with it. I need to just trust this process. I need to trust myself. And that last relationship created some instability in those areas. And now I get to look at that as well. And so, just like you said, every relationship is an opportunity not only to heal us and grow in a relationship, but it's also an opportunity to heal other relationships we've had in the past. We don't need those people to heal. People always want closure. No. They're looking for the solution in that other person. That the solution was never in that person.
No, it wasn't in that person. If it was, you'd still be together with them.
Exactly. Right? Absolutely.
Then we'd still be together with them. But they, you know, every person, just like we're catalyst for people, and everybody's a catalyst.
Yeah.
And if I take the view that everything in the universe, the sea of energy, is all about creation, creating.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And not with an agenda, creating this and only this, and that's the only thing that's good. Right?
Yeah.
Not that kind of thinking, right? Because we have this written relationship. We have our list. We have all this stuff. Like, well, this is what's good. This is not good. But what if we just meet the momentums? And I do this. I can speak from experience with my husband, too. We've had lots of things go on that could have broke us. But we met those moments with, wow, what is this?
Yeah.
What's coming up in me in this moment? What's coming up in you in this moment? Because most often, we're mirroring each other's triggers, especially somebody we're intimately involved with. I mean, we're doing it anyways. Everybody's a mirror. But in an intimate relationship, it goes deeper.
Right.
Because we're letting that person in. It's almost like we're parting the Red Sea. We're parting the onion layers to let that person in a little bit. Right?
Yep.
So, and then because we're doing that, we're getting into some of the deeper layers of our vulnerability.
Yes,
and that's
absolutely.
And that's why stuff comes up. If love goes in, whatever is blocking that love inside of us has to come to the surface. So our partner is always going to be a catalyst, as we are, for our partner to get in touch with these deeper layers of ourselves where we still have walls of protection that are keeping love out.
Absolutely. And on that note, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about change, which is always a fun topic for all of us in the world, right? We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. We're back. I'm loving this discussion. I feel like it's gone too fast, and there's so much. I haven't even gotten out of the introduction part of your book with all of the fun things that are covered here. But in talking about healing and being in relationship, I think it's a great way to illustrate the things in your book that you cover. And you talk about change. And one of the things you say is we cling to what we believe we know so strongly as a way to feel safe in the world that we become inflexible to anything outside our comfort zone.
Yeah.
And then it goes on to talk about that a little bit. And it says, why do we block the natural flow? Why does the unnatural come to feel so natural to us? Safety is why. We're looking to stay safe in a very, what feels like a lot of times, a very unsafe world.
Yes.
I love that you included this in here because you go on to talk about every one of us. Our basic primal need first is to feel safe.
Yeah.
We need to feel safe.
Every room we walk into, am I safe? Am I safe? Am I safe? That's the inner subconscious dialogue that's going on, you know?
Yeah.
Do I need my walls? Can I let my walls down? Can I open? Do I close? Kind of like a flower. Is it sunny? I'll open. If it's cold, I'll close.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's that kind of mechanism, right? Where we're always tuning into the environment and looking for safety first. And with that, looking for safety, we're often not seeing reality as it is because we're looking at life through that lens. Right?
Yeah.
It's like people talk about, I want to be in the now, I want to be fully present, but they don't understand what that means. They really don't.
Yeah, well, if they understood that it means true vulnerability, probably
exactly.
People
it means
wouldn't want it.
Complete vulnerability.
Yeah.
It means complete, absolute openness and vulnerability to the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And what that moment might bring that might shake up our world, that might create a mess, that might activate a trigger, that might, you know, bring something temporarily unpleasant to our awareness, right? So everyone wants to say live in the now, but, you know, that's a mental concept the way most people understand it. The living reality is that I am really present and open, not in my mind, and nothing has to meet my expectations.
Right.
That's the thing, right? You know,
that's the other trick, right? People have expectations of what they think it should be. And then when it fails in that, they're like, well, wait a minute. I was vulnerable with these parameters.
Yeah. You know, and it's a trap. And so being in the now means I'm fully alive. Like I'm trained in traditional Hawaiian healing, blessed to have been ordained and initiated as a teacher and healer in the lineage of my elder. And, you know, one of the principles is manava, manava. It means I am now, not it is now. I am now. I am the force of now. This moment is my only moment of power. This moment is my only moment where I can affect change. It's I now, not it. It is abstract. It is outside of me. It is now what? What is that? It doesn't make sense when you really think about it. It, mm-hmm. what is it? It is now. No, I am now. I am this force of now. And in this force of now, the force of life is coursing through me, listening to me, and creating with and through me. That's how we become co-creators. When we're really in the present, when we're really in the now, we're alive. It's vital. It's like a current. It's like a waterfall. It's a river. It's constantly moving. But we are so caught up in trying to be safe that we're holding on to the riverbanks.
Yeah.
We're holding on to the rocks. We don't feel the safety enough. Real safety is when I'm vulnerable. That's the kicker, right?
Mm-hmm.
Real safety is when I'm vulnerable, because when I'm vulnerable, I'm 100% present. And then I'm present to tune into the moment and tune into the elements in the environment. When I'm caught in a safety perception idea, I'm just caught in my own movie and my own idea of safety, which is actually making me less safe, because then I'm not present.
Yeah. And I love that you talk about that a little bit too, where you say that when we get in that very singular state of looking for safety, we define things like, this is good. This is bad. This is right. This is wrong. I like this. I don't like that. And we create those things because we think that that defines us or creates the illusion of safetyness, right?
Mm-hmm. And I just want to clarify too. So there's a period of time where we needed those definitions because they did do that job,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's not to negate. There's periods of time, like there was a moment when I was studying movement therapy with a teacher. I was in Munich, Germany, and we had this dance class, and I had this big epiphany and awakening, and I was walking to lunch and I went, oh my God, I've been bashing my coping mechanisms as bad, but if I didn't have them, I would never have survived.
Absolutely.
I don't want to bash ego. I'm not an ego basher. I'm about ego evolution, evolving the ego,
mm-hmm.
and evolving the coping mechanisms so that they become healthier, more life-affirming coping mechanisms.
We've had a therapist on our show, and we talk about that, like not defining anger as a negative emotion.
No, it's a beautiful emotion.
Right.
It is an emotion that's saying, enough, this doesn't work. Something new has to give, and it shatters whatever is there in that moment through the anger. It's a shattering energy. And if we don't know how to navigate it, yes, it can be very destructive. But when we have awareness about anger, then we can say, okay, I can feel it. It's like, okay, what, there's something in me that's, it's just wanting to break out, break free. And for me, one of my ways of navigating anger is drumming. So drumming and singing, I spent many years with some beautiful Aboriginal teachers, First Nation teachers, and the drum has become my medicine. And so what I do, it doesn't happen much anymore, but if it does, and what I used to do a lot, because I had a lot of anger, is I would go to my drum and I would drum and I would just start singing vocables, just sounds. And I would do a prayer and I'd say, okay, you know, God, angel, spirit, this anger is in me. It needs to come out. I don't want it to harm me. I don't want it to harm anybody. Please help just to release it from my body.
Right.
Because I know that there's growth and healing on the other side of it.
Yeah.
And so I would drum and I'd sing and I'd really loudly, and always at some point, sometimes it was within a few minutes, sometimes the anger was so deep it took 10, 15 minutes. But then all of a sudden there's a cracking and the sadness behind the anger pours out of me. And the sobbing, the deep emotional pain, the hurt, the lostness that's really behind the protection of the anger comes out.
Yeah.
And then I just sob, and then I keep drumming, and then my singing goes from being strong and powerful, like, you know, my sobbing, like, you know, but it's beautiful because giving my body a voice for all that energy that's been held for so long, you know, and anger too, you know, a lot of our coping mechanisms, our souls like too sometimes, hey, we got to grow beyond this. This isn't helping us. It helped us for a time, but now if we're going to thrive, if we're going to a new level of living and loving and being, this needs to break. This wall needs to shatter. This belief needs to be re-edited. It needs to be rewritten, right? So we honor every step and stage of the process of healing.
Yeah.
We need our dysfunctional coping mechanisms for a while until we can educate our ego, right? so we can re-educate that protective mechanism in us to have a healthier way to do that and to serve our soul identity.
Yeah, I love this.
So, you know, it's really, and it's all important. God didn't give us any ingredient in our life that doesn't have a purpose. Why is only light and goodness have a purpose and darkness doesn't? No, darkness has its purpose. Pain has its purpose.
Yeah.
Suffering has its purpose. There's a beautiful poem, I believe it was by Rumi. He says, don't surrender your sadness and your suffering so quickly. Let it season you like no other divine ingredient can. And that is one of my favorite Sufi poems. And when I read that in my 30s, I was like, oh my gosh, that just spoke it to my soul.
Yeah.
Do not surrender your sadness and your suffering and your grief so quickly. Let it season you like no other divine ingredient can. And this is what we've lost touch with. We've made negative feelings, every emotion, you know, even irritation, jealousy, envy, we've made all of these things to be the root of all evil.
Yeah,
and they can
you know
be.
That
can be if they're unmonitored. Sure, it can create destruction. But if we look at them as a feedback system, it's like, okay, well, where do I have this envy? You know, instead of being obsessed, like, oh well, it's because somewhere there's a part of me that sees that I can do that too. So then we turn envy into inspiration.
Absolutely. Right? Which comes to another quote in the book that you said, which is, what I have come to understand from nature is that it will grow weeds and orchids equally.
Yes.
And so just like your analogy for let it season you for a time, right? If you sit in it and you don't go through it and you don't process it and you don't make meaning out of it and you don't allow for the lessons of growth, it could turn to a bitter weed in your soul or your spirit or your nature of who you are. But if you do the work, it can bloom. It can actually help you bloom this beautiful flower that's within you, right?
Yes, absolutely. And the other thing sometimes we do is we'll take the lawnmower and cut up everything, and then we don't even get to see the flower we can become. We don't get to see the soul seed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? We just keep cutting it down, right? And thinking, okay, let's safe, it's clean. It's clean. There's no mess, you know, and that robs us too. Then we never get to discover that unique essence of who we are and in each new moment. And it's not about defining this is who I am. No, each moment I'm becoming.
Right. We should be evolving all the time, right? We're growing.
Well, like nature.
Yeah.
Like even a blade of grass is not the same 1 second to the other.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Everything is movement. You know, it's like, and it's when we step out of moving and growing and evolving and becoming, when we want to reduce ourselves and anything in life to a singularity, to a label, to a name, to a definition, we're basically killing the life in that force or that person or in ourselves.
Yeah.
We're stopping the natural flow of life, which is movement. You know, like in what I love in Hawaii too, Akua is God, right? Mm-hmm. But they say they don't even really have a word for God because it's too big. But it's the action force in life. That's how God is understood. And in mystical teachings in the past, God was called the prime mover, right? The prime mover, the action force. So when I am in movement, this was an insight I had one day. I was on my exercise machine and I was working through something, trying real hard to be in the manava, trying real hard to process, trying real hard to not stay stuck. And I was like bringing it in and just moving. And then all of a sudden I had this aha. I went, oh, and it moved. I went, when I'm in action, when I'm in movement, I'm in God.
Yeah.
And I went, wow. And that was just like an insight that's never left me.
Yeah. That's so
when
beautiful. I resonated with your book so deeply. I love the Hawaiian healing aspect. And you go into a lot of these terminologies throughout the entire book. So for all of our listeners listening, it's a beautiful book. There's a lot of depth here. We haven't even scratched the surface. I'm not even out of the introduction. And yet our time is drawing to an end now. But I want to let everyone know the name of the book is Resilience, Grace, and the Art of Showing Up. Luana, I love the illustration of nature. And I'm going to share with you, you brought up a blade of grass. And this is, I'm a life coach. I know you don't particularly love that name, but you are a mentor and a healer. And I think that you can resonate with this as well. We had a drought last year, a very bad drought, and my lawn did not do well. I followed the restrictions for water and whatnot. And when my lawn guy came back, I said, this lawn is just ruined. I don't think it's ever going to come back. I don't know what to do with it. And he said, just be patient with it. So he mowed it and we watered it and we fertilized it and fed it. And I was getting a little bit challenged by it. I'm like, should I just throw out some new seed? And he's like, nope, I wouldn't do that. Just be patient. Just be patient. I'm going to fertilize it again in a few weeks. It's going to come back. You know, after I fertilize it, wait 24 hours, water it. You're going to be surprised. You're going to be surprised. And one day I came home. I had been gone away for a weekend. And I had left. And when I had left, I just saw those brown tops of that grass. And I just thought, this grass is never going to heal. You know, I'm getting really challenged by it. And it looks so terrible. And it just makes me feel bad, you know. And I like to go out and ground myself to the earth. I like to walk through my grass. I like to throw a ball with my dog in the backyard. And I just couldn't help but see those brown spots. And they were challenging my perfectionistic mind.
Yeah.
And so I came back from this trip and I walked out there. And I could not believe the grass had healed. There was no brown spots left. And while I was standing out there looking at it, I thought about the clients that I actually work with. And I thought, you know, some clients come to me and they seem really dead. They seem really brown. They have a lot of scorch marks on their heart and soul, and they are really struggling. But through every hour of coaching, I see little glimmers of growth, little new life that comes to being. And eventually they start to soar. And it is such a great thing to be a part of. And that that process of working with my gardener on that reminded me that I was so patient with the people that I work with. Like, I'm not in judgment of them. Why can't I just appreciate nature for what it is? And sometimes we're a little scorched earth. Sometimes we're a little bit damaged by the traumas that we've had. And I need to learn to be patient, not only with the things in nature that are around me that maybe don't have the look of perfection that my mind thinks they need to be, but to be able to appreciate them for the struggles that they've gone through. My grass recovered after a very dry summer, a very little water and very little nurturing. And it was a reminder to me that I need to continuously nurture myself, continuously work on the things that I have to work on. And just in the way that I work with my clients, right? It's no different. And so it's one of the reasons I loved your book. You have a lot of illustrations in nature and how they relate to our bodies, our hearts, our souls, our minds.
And our soul is really a garden. Our heart is a garden that we need to tend to, but it needs, like you're saying, time, love, patience, you know, and love the scorch marks.
Yeah.
Love the scars.
Yeah. So, you know, I am learning to make peace with my own scars, and it's an evolution. It's a price. Like, I've been doing this work for 30 years and I still feel like I'm on the very beginning cusp some days. And other days I'm able to look back and go, I've really grown in so many beautiful and strong ways. And I think I think the reason I love this book so much and I wanted to have you on and share this with our listeners is that there's really value in all of this. And whether you believe in God or nature or the universe or whatever you call that life force energy, the most important thing to know that this life is happening for us, and it's up to us to decide what that's going to grow, how we're going to develop.
What we're going to feed. And if I can leave you guys with one more Hawaiian principle, makia is focus. Where my attention goes, my energy flows, and that's the reality that grows.
Yes, that's beautiful. That's a perfect way to sum this up.
And so that, I go into that principle in the book as well, you know, and so really we're such a fast food culture, throwaway culture, you know, and we throw parts of ourselves away so quickly and we throw each other away too quickly too, you know, and even just to touch on just one little piece here, you know, which breaks my heart so much when I, you know, I keep hearing people say, oh, that person's a narcissist, that person's toxic. And, you know, for somebody to be a pathological narcissist, there's a lot more involved than just having a reactivity or just having a, you know, a traumatized behavior, right? So people are calling just people that are recovering from trauma or have trauma they don't even know, they're labeling them with these horrible names, you know? And it's like, no, for a good majority of people, it's simply trauma.
Absolutely.
Trauma that hasn't been healed, trauma that hasn't been recognized. And the cure for trauma is love. Now, if I need to keep protection from somebody because it's really excessive, yes, that's my prerogative. I can do that. But I don't have to label people. I don't have to make them a monster to do that.
Yeah.
I can just say, you know, for me in this moment, I don't feel like I can be with that person. I don't feel safe. And that's enough.
Right.
I don't have to say I don't feel safe because they're a narcissist or because they're toxic.
Right.
No, I can just say, no, okay, for me, this I don't understand it. And yeah, they must have some pain or trauma inside them. So, but I'm not the one to be with them for this. And that's okay. We can say that.
Yeah, and it's okay to have boundaries.
But I can self-advocate for myself, but I don't have to destroy somebody or talk about somebody in such a mean way to validate why I'm stepping away.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
and I think that that's a trap, and it certainly is one that I see a lot online, especially if you get on TikTok. Everybody's a narcissist, but if you start reading Psychology Today and look at the numbers of actual diagnosed narcissism, the numbers are much lower than...
Exactly. A pathological narcissist is completely different. That's somebody who's really intentionally, with every fiber of their being, manipulating and trying to hurt somebody. Majority of people are hurting each other unconsciously. Because there's traumatic trauma patterns that are being activated that they don't even understand themselves.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's it's a different story.
Yeah.
And yes, we can have boundaries and we can say, hey, when you react this way, this hurts me. And then that person, you know, if they're not a narcissist, with most are not, they say, oh my God, sorry, I didn't mean to hurt you. That's
right.
Not what I'm trying to do. And then the floor opens for dialogue, and that's when we can go into the deep, and that's when we can get in touch with the messy bits that have created personality patterns in us that are dysfunctional, that are harmful, that we're unaware of.
Yeah.
And most of us, I say, yeah, we all have it. Hands up, me too, you know? And life is about learning to know, well, where, you know, that's the thing too. When we have trauma and we get triggered, you know, we're all narcissists in that moment. Because in that moment, only our truth is true.
Yeah.
So we have to look and see, well, where am I a narcissist? If I'm going to point my finger at this person, where does my narcissism come into place?
Yeah, and the reality is we all have it.
We all have it.
We all have it.
And it is a divine ingredient. It is a part of our being for a reason, for learning, for growing, you know? And so it's just a matter of if I can acknowledge where I'm a narcissist and where I have narcissistic reactions, then I can be aware and then I can navigate and I can make new choices. But if I'm denying that I have narcissistic behavior, you know, then I can't do anything about it. I have to see it. Yes, I have moments where that comes up.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And if every single human being really looks into and really studies a bit about narcissism and understands, you know, narcissistic protective mechanisms in trauma, right? Then we can all agree, oh yeah, we all got it sometimes.
Yeah.
And then we can start being kinder with ourselves and kinder with other people. Because right now everybody's just being rejected. You're this, you're this. It's like, no, that's not going to heal anybody. That just creates more division and more separation. It was just going to create more narcissism, really, in the end, if you want to look at it that way.
Yeah.
More narcissistic reactive behavior for self-preservation. Because that's what that's, you know, the deepest narcissist, they have the most excruciating trauma. So trauma is the root, not an excuse, but a root, so we can actually at least start engaging with more kindness.
Right. And again, like you say, true narcissism, I've looked it up because when I first became, I never even heard that term until I was in a relationship with someone and everyone kept saying, well, he's a narcissist. And I did a lot of reading and research on that. And the reality is that that's really something for a qualified person to make a diagnosis of. And it doesn't really matter at the end of the day, because at the end of the day, if the behaviors, attitudes, and actions of that person are not something that you want to tolerate, you don't have to.
Yes, you can just walk. You don't have to. You can walk away.
You don't have to.
Yes.
We all have our agency, and we all have the ability to say, I don't want to engage in a relationship with these kind of behaviors or thought patterns. And so I'm going to remove myself. And it's just a choice you make. And you can do that in a loving way instead of a divisive way that is also more harmful for that person that you're walking away from.
Exactly. Well, it's harmful for everybody.
Absolutely. Luana, it's been wonderful having you. We have got to wrap up the show. I am so sad because we didn't even get into the meat in the book. And you have beautiful stories of travels and life experiences that are really intense that you share in the book. You've been to Germany and Switzerland, and you've had a lot of life experiences within those moves. I did get into that part of the book.
Nepal, Thailand, Israel, Turkey,
yes,
all over the place.
You were everywhere, and I can't wait to finish reading the book. I am so caught up in it. Thank you for reaching out to me. Thank you for making me aware of your book. I love it. I want to incorporate it into my coaching practice. And I really hope that there's a time that you and I get to connect. Before we go, please let our listeners know, where can they find you?
I founded an institute called Soulspectives Institute for Personal Transformation. So the website is soulspectivesinstitute.com. My retreat center is serenitybythesea.com. And my book author website is Luana Victoria Arana author.com.
I'm sorry, I can't say your name as beautiful as you do. I'm trying my best. But what is that website for the books?
It's Luana Victoria Arana author.
Okay.
.com.
And we'll link those in our show details. So I also want to say that you have another book coming out soon.
Yes, I have a new book coming out. Yes.
I'm very excited. We should promote that too. Awesome.
And it's all about loving and embracing your ego rather than bashing it as a way to your path to your soul.
Oh, I love it. Get the book Resilience, Grace, and the Art of Showing Up. I love this book. It is really a great way to understand how self-awareness and walking maybe an unconventional path can bring us to enlightenment and awareness and build a better relationship with ourselves.
If I can say, it's unconventional to our Western mind, but it's completely natural.
Yes,
to the natural.
It is. And of course, I love it because I have a very holistic Eastern philosophy background, both in massage, energy work, and home birth midwifery. So I have that background. It was one that really resonated with me. I loved your journeys of the sound baths and breath work. You cover a lot of things in there that I'm like, oh yeah. You know, all the things that I've done, we've just done them in very different ways. I didn't travel across the world to find these things. I found them right here in little Utah. So it's a beautiful journey. I love that you take your readers on the journey with you of your life. And it's a very vulnerable tale and it's very raw. And I love that. I love the authenticity. I love the vulnerability that you share. I feel that way about my story and sharing it with others. And I really enjoyed it. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much. That means a lot. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
It was a lovely conversation. We could go on for hours.
We could. You and I, and we have. we have even before this call.
Yeah.
So I want to say for all of you listening, you can subscribe for free to our podcast on anywhere you listen and get your podcast. If you have liked what you heard, give us a rating and a review. It really helps us to come up in the notoriety on these platforms. If you know someone or you have a real story about life that you're willing to share, you can send us an email at rrpodcast@ksl.com. And you can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Relentlessly Resilient. Instagram, it's Relentlessly Resilient Podcast. On either of those platforms, you can click a little button. It has a link to my Calendly for a 15-minute consult call. If you would like to share a story and pitch yourself or somebody else to be on the show, I would be glad to have you just schedule time with me on that by clicking that little button, and we'd be glad to have that conversation with you. Remember, whatever you do today, remember to be kind. You have no idea the struggles others are dealing with in their lives. Have a great day.